Hello and welcome to the MMQB Monday Morning NFL Podcast. I am Gary Gramling. We are through the Pro Bowl. Unforgettable Pro Bowl. The NFC topped Team Urban, I think is how it works now. I'm not entirely sure. I do know the Pro Bowl has been completed by the time we are recording this. I can say that with confidence. The game's already been played. But it's Super Bowl week. Down in Miami, we are going to do something a little bit different on this week's show. We have three of our writers, Jenny Brentis, Kalen Kaler, and Connor Orr down there. We're just going to chat a little bit about what they're most looking forward to this week and in the game in general. And then, of course, throughout the week, we will have our usual just killer coverage here. Weekside Podcast will be down there. Albert will be down there. I will be joined by a special guest on Thursday to help us deep dive preview the Super Bowl, and also that same special guest will join me Sunday night to recap the Super Bowl in a way that only that special guest can. But right now we're gonna bring in Jenny Brentis. Hey Jenny.
Hey Gary, how are ya?
I'm doing all right. You won the great race down to Miami. You're the first one there, I believe. And I have a question for you. What are you most looking forward to Super Bowl 54?
I'm pretty excited to see this matchup between two of the best offensive play callers in the NFL, Andy Reid and Kyle Shanahan. Obviously, they're not going against each other at the same time with offensive play calling, but just, you know, they're both so creative. They've both devised offenses that keep the opponent off guard. You know, Andy Reid, I wrote the story about it last year in the 2018 season for our future issue about how Andy Reid was a key person who kind of brought NFL offenses into the future. He melded the West Coast system with all these spread concepts. He started doing it in Philly and then took it to the next level with Alex Smith. And he was almost preparing an offense for a quarterback he didn't yet have. And Patrick Mahomes became the perfect quarterback for him in this system. And they pull ideas from everywhere, you know, random college films. They steal from opponents around the league. And so I think it's always fascinating to kind of see week to week how things look different. Obviously, they can score quickly. And then on the other side, Kyle Shanahan has really, one of the things that his players say about him is they wanted to play for the 49ers in part because they thought Kyle Shanahan was one of the most innovative play callers in the NFL. And defensive players have said that. Richard Sherman has said that. You know, they felt like they knew the team would be in good hands. And obviously you do many other things as a head coach, but seeing the creativity, you know, I talked to Dan Quinn this week. Kyle Shanahan obviously coached under him in Atlanta, and he said that he felt like Kyle could coach any position on the offense, offensive line, tight end, wide receiver, running backs, or quarterback. And he said it's very rare to have a person who is an offensive coordinator and then a head coach who you feel like could quite honestly be a position coach at any position. And he told the 49ers that in the interview, or while they were interviewing Kyle. They did the interview in Atlanta. And so Dan had a chance to visit with the 49ers contingent. So I just think it'll be this, I think, you know, whoever has the ball, there's just going to be this great anticipation of what are they going to dial up? How are they going to try to get the best of out of their team? And there's different ways to go about it. Obviously, Patrick Mahomes is this otherworldly talent at quarterback, and Kyle Shanahan has certainly been willing to run the ball and only pass eight times, as we saw in the NFC Championship game. But I think it'll just be quite a showcase for scheming and creativity and this new offensive era that we're in.
I know. It's like, obviously, we all know what the 49ers just did to the Packers, and I think a lot of people are sort of, you know, have a little bit of fun with Jimmy Garoppolo. That's okay. He can take it. He's very wealthy, and he's very handsome, and this will roll right off his back. But it wasn't too long ago. I mean, it was, less than 2 months ago that they went down to New Orleans, and the defense gave up 46 points, and they put up 48. I mean, that was a game where they had to go shot for shot with the Saints. They were trailing early. They were trailing big early. And they came back, and, you know, Garoppolo threw for 350 yards in that game. And they just put up a ton of points through the air. And it's like, people kind of lose track of the fact that, like, yeah, 49ers can do that too. They not only have sort of the offense set up to go through there if they have to, but I feel like Kyle Shanahan, more than anyone, has, like, plays in his back pocket that he can go to if he needs to go to them. And if he doesn't, kind of like what we saw with the Packers last week, where they got a lead and just sort of held on to that lead, he just kind of keeps them in their back pocket, in his back pocket, until he has to pull it out.
Yeah, I like that you brought up the Saints game as an example, Gary, because I think about that too as kind of one of those benchmark moments in a season where we're reminded that they can win a lot of different ways. And, you know, the defense had been the story to that point, and they'd won a lot of close games, one-score games, you know, decided by a final field goal. And that game really was kind of matching toe for toe with another explosive offense. And I think that really, in my mind, was the week that we thought this could be a team that could go to the Super Bowl. I think that changed perceptions of them a little bit. And, you know, I think you're right with Kyle. Like, he just seems to know how to keep the opponent off balance, and he seems to be very thoughtful with, you know, he gets into a good rhythm, I think, with the play calling. And, you know, one thing that stood out was, you know, of course, this week has brought up lots of reanalysis of the Super Bowl loss to the Patriots, and of course the Falcons losing the 28-3 to lead, and Shanahan's play calling came under scrutiny. But he gave a really thoughtful and in-depth explanation of exactly why he called a pass play on the 2nd and 11, right? You know, they have that big throw to Julio Jones. Mm-hmm. They're in field goal range and they lose a yard on first down. The rush, they run the ball on first down, lose a yard, and then on second down, they call a pass play that ends up in a sack. And then, of course, we know that there was a penalty on third down. They get knocked out of field goal range and punt. And so Shanahan had a lot of scrutiny. But the detail in which he went over that, and he said, you know what, I don't regret passing on second down because our run game wasn't working. I regret the call that I made. I thought we'd get a different look, and I didn't like what we had. And ultimately, I thought maybe we could get the ball away, but it resulted in the sack. But even just the amount of detail he was willing to go into and the thought behind it. And I do think that's one of those cases where a lot of things happen in the game and it's easy to scrutinize a single call. But if you take that actual call, you can see why he made it in that certain situation. Similar, of course, to the goal line interception in the Patriots-Seahawks Super Bowl. So I thought the way that he explained that and was willing to go in depth into his thought process was really a window into how he thinks as a play caller. And even while that was one of his worst moments, I'm sure, as a play caller, I thought it showed the care that goes into every call.
Yeah, I think process gets overused as sort of an excuse for bad decision making sometimes. But there is a process, and sometimes the process makes a lot of sense. And just because of the result, I remember Matt Ryan taking that sack, and I remember thinking he could have gotten rid of that ball. I think he thought that he was going to be able to escape, and Trey Flowers just made a really, you know, he's a really good player. He changed directions in a way that you would not expect a guy that large to change directions, and he finished the play, and that's the way it went down. But
that's exactly right, Gary. I just rewatched it. I had the same thought. I don't think a lot of players would have made that sack.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it was one of those little subtle athleticism type things that, and especially when they showed the really low angle of Matt Ryan, it was like, oh wow, yeah, I could see why Matt Ryan thought he was gonna get away on that. But, you know, if he gets rid of the ball, we're having a different conversation about it. We might be having a different conversation about it if they run into a brick wall two more times and you know, miss a field goal, and then we're saying, wow, Kyle Shanahan got so conservative there.
Yeah, there's absolutely a lot of ways to look at it. And I agree with you. I mean, I think that the intention that goes into a play call is just as important as the outcome. Of course, not in the public dialogue or the Twitter discourse, mm-hmm. but in actuality.
What is reality in the end, though? Isn't the Twitter discourse really what it all comes down to? This is all just fodder for that.
Gary, you're the one who gave me the great life advice of when in doubt, don't tweet.
Just never tweet. Just retweet your local radio appearances, and that's it. That should be all your Twitter feed says. Well, Jenny, you have a big week coming up here in Miami. You will, of course, be back with Connor for the Weekside podcast on Wednesday, and looking forward to it. This is going to be a I don't want to bash the Patriots. I enjoyed watching the Patriots over the years, and I think we might not have seen the last of them, but it's always kind of interesting to see a Super Bowl that does not include the Patriots.
Yes, it's a lot of fresh storylines, a lot of fresh faces. Connor and I talked about this on the weak side last week, but just like the fact that there's so many players that haven't been to the Super Bowl, which like when it's the Patriots, they're all just used to it, right? You know, the PR staff is used to it. The players are used to it. Like I was in Kansas City this past week and like so many of the questions are like, what do you think media night is going to be like? And no one ever asked the Patriots that because, you know, more than half the roster had been at media night, you know, 12 months earlier. So.
Oh, man. Well, like I said, I'm sure we'll see them back next year. But we'll get a little break. Someone else gets to hold the trophy this season, and that's always nice.
Right. That's the only thing we know for sure at this point, Gary.
Mm-hmm. All right, Jenny. Well, thanks for stopping in. We'll talk to you later this week.
Thanks for having me, Gary.
All right, we're gonna leave Miami for this next one. We're gonna go a little bit north in Florida. Going to go up to Orlando and bring in Kaylin Kaler. Kaylin, how are you?
Hey, Gary, I'm doing well.
So I have I know what your answer is. So I'll just ask the question and realize that you are going to answer two questions with this. You did not forget where the Super Bowl is being played. You are not a big fan of the Pro Bowl. And do they still do the Pro Bowl in Orlando? That's how much I know about what happened in the Pro Bowl.
They had it there this year.
You're not there for that, but I will ask you, what are you most excited about with this year's Super Bowl?
So this year's Super Bowl, I'm most excited to watch Raheem Mostert play and see, you know, can he replicate the last game he had, his breakout game, his breakout performance for the 49ers after a long career of being cut and cut and cut and cut again. Six different teams cut him. Obviously, that's been well popularized in the last week or so since that game. His story has kind of become, you know, the underdog story of this Super Bowl. So I think his story is really cool. And that is why I'm currently in Orlando, because tomorrow morning I'm going to be going to New Smyrna Beach, Florida, which is on the east coast of Florida, sort of by Daytona, a little bit south of Daytona. And it is like Daytona. It is one of the few beaches left where you can drive your car out onto the beach. But more importantly than that, it is Raheem Mostert's hometown. That is where he grew up. And that is where he was actually a surfer. He did some surfing in his spare time there alongside, you know, having a really good track career and a really good football career in high school there. So, I will be talking to some coaches tomorrow, seeing his high school, seeing the beach where he used to surf, which is the town is also known as the shark bite capital of the country because they do have plenty of sharks in the water. Although I did learn from a pro surfer who used to surf with Raheem that these sharks are not of the great white variety, so a little bit less threatening. They are usually little like baby sharks, as the song would say.
If we had the rights to baby sharks, we would have to queue it up right now.
We would.
Yeah, Raheem Mostert, who obviously, like you said, he's like one of the ultimate underdog stories here. And I love the fact that it's, on one hand, because of fantasy football, running backs a lot of times get like too much credit. But at the same time, like running backs don't get paid anymore. You know, now that Todd Gurley got that contract, no running back will ever be paid more than minimum wage for playing in the NFL ever again on their second contract. But so to have this guy sort of, I mean, he's been bouncing around for a while too. It's not like he just came in like, you know, 2018 or right? This was a 2015 draft candidate, goes undrafted, and just never stuck on a team. And all of a sudden, if you go back to December 1st when they lost that game at Baltimore, his last seven games, he's rushed for 657 yards and 10 touchdowns. So if you do the math and you know, extrapolate that out over a uh, over a 16 game schedule. That's a really good fantasy football running back right there.
Yeah, and his story is interesting because every time he was cut, it's not like he was searching for a team for very long. A lot of times teams were cutting him with the hopes of him, you know, clearing waivers and getting added to their practice squad. And his rookie year, that never happened. He was cut from three different teams, and each time he landed with another team because they picked him up off waivers. So, you know, there was always somewhat of a demand for him. He just had some injuries. Once he got to San Francisco, he had some injuries that limited him, and he did struggle with ball security for a while. He would, you know, I don't have the stat in front of me right now, but he sort of had a reputation for fumbling. So I think there was a hesitation at first. You know, John Lynch has said they kept him on because he had the speed, and he does have this incredible speed. So John Lynch inherited him. Chip Kelly actually pushed to sign him in San Francisco in 2016 after the Bears cut him. So that was sort of what brought him to San Francisco originally, because Chip Kelly had him actually with the Eagles, which was his first team that signed him as an undrafted free agent his rookie year. And Chip Kelly had remembered him and was like, oh, we got to sign that guy now that he's available again. So that's how he wound up in San Francisco to begin with. And I think, you know, John Lynch inherited him, but he saw, oh, this guy has like some really tantalizing speed, like really different type of speed. And you saw that in their last game, the NFC Championship game, when Packers safety Darnell Savage, who himself is a very fast player with some really good speed, he was just unable to tackle Raheem and kept taking, you know, bad angles on him. And it just kind of showed that Mostert is a different kind of runner, and somebody who, you know, some people might say, oh, well, if you get any fast running back in this scheme, in Shanahan's scheme, like, it's going to work. But I think Raheem, I think he's not just like any player. I think he does have a different kind of speed and a different kind of running style that really works with this offense. And I think he's pretty talented. And I actually talked to his agent for this story, and he said, because they signed him to a 3-year contract in March for not a lot of money. It was a pretty good deal, obviously, because he hadn't really proven himself to be worth more than that at the time. And I was asking his agent, like, you know, will there be an opportunity to sort of renegotiate that in the offseason based off of the contributions that he actually did do this season? And his agent was... he said, you know, like, there will be an opportunity to discuss that later down the line, and we will, basically. So that was kind of interesting, too.
It's funny. Coming into the season, you just look at what that running back depth chart was, and you know, you think back when they signed Tevin Coleman, a great free agent signing there, and you know, we'll see if he's ready to play in the Super Bowl. If he's not, that means even a bigger workload here for Mostert in the Super Bowl. But they signed Tevin Coleman. They already had Matt Breida. Jerick McKinnon was a big free agent signing the previous year. He's obviously still working his way back from an injury, but you'd look at this depth chart and be like, I don't know, he's not getting on the field. He does get on the field because he's one of their best special teams players, a core special teams guy. He actually led them in special teams tackles this year. But yeah, I mean, it's the opportunity arose, and on top of that, yes, it's a very good offense for running backs, but if you have that home run hitting speed like he does, you can be special, not just, you know, like, oh, here's a good guy in the system.
Yeah, totally. And I think it's a really interesting strategy, you know, to sort of stockpile, if you will, all of those talented running backs. But it was smart by them because they ended up needing to reach to the end of the line there and needing to trust him. So, you know, on one hand, you give credit to Shanahan and Lynch for playing Mostert, but they didn't really have a choice. And he was the one who kind of rewarded them with their faith in him. And it was more of an opportunity than he'd had, you know, at any other point in his career. And, you know, one detail that I'll share that will be in the story that I think is really a fun and interesting one that sort of illustrates like how far he's come and like how hard it is to be bouncing around from team to team like that. So when he was with Cleveland, this is his second season. His wife is actually from Cleveland. She is born and raised there. Like, that's like her home. So she grew up a Browns fan. So she's really excited. He plays in the first three preseason games. He gets a little bit of a injury. I think it was like a hamstring tweak. And they were like, you know what? Rest the fourth preseason game. We want you healthy for week one. So he's thinking like, okay, yeah, like I'm going to play week one. I'm on this team. And he does make the roster. He makes the 53-man roster. And then the very next day, he gets cut. And because I think they had picked up guys that were cut from other teams and they got rid of him. And it was the same day as his wife's bridal shower. And so they kind of kept the news from his wife so she could enjoy, his fiance at the time, so she could enjoy her bridal shower. And at the bridal shower, there were cookies shaped like his jersey, decorated with the Browns jersey that said Mostert. And there were some Browns players' wives who were there who are friends of hers, and they knew because they'd seen it on Twitter, and they couldn't say anything. Yeah.
Oh, that is ice cold.
Isn't that pretty sad?
I mean, it happened. You can't protect yourself on the roster by having your wife have your have her bridal shower on cut down day, but that's that's pretty harsh.
Right. So yeah, that kind of illustrated like what their life was like for the first like 2.5-3 years there. So that was pretty interesting. So I'm personally fascinated with him because, you know, he's come a long way. And if the Super Bowl is anything like the NFC Championship game, I mean, even if he has half the game that he had in the NFC Championship game, it's still going to be a huge performance for him.
I was going to say, if they hold him to 130 yards, yeah. We'll all be disappointed.
Right.
All right, KK. Well, we'll look forward to that. And thanks for checking in from Orlando, Florida. Look out for sharks and cars and sharks driving cars.
Sharks driving cars on the beach.
There you go.
Thanks, Gary.
All right, Connor, I have a question for you now that you are in Miami.
Hi, Gary.
Don't say hi to me. Just answer my question. What are you most looking forward to this week for Super Bowl 54?
I think this is a weird answer, but this will be my eighth Super Bowl, I think. And the thing that I'm always most interested in is how coaches handle the moment. And, you see some coaches come in, and it's their first Super Bowl, and they'll say, well, we're relaxed, we're focused, and we're just going to treat this like any other week. And then you see, like, Ron Rivera and the Panthers, I remember back in 2015 or 16, say, like, no one is allowed to go anywhere or do anything until 3 weeks after the game. And he actually had the guy from the Falcons that got caught with the prostitute a few weeks
Eugene Robinson. Eugene Robinson down in Miami, too.
Yeah, so he had him come in and talk to the team, and I was like, wow, imagine it probably sucked any remaining juice out of the room with that one, you know? And like, there was just no, and so I'm always interested in, like, what teams do. I mean, obviously, everyone, you know, grasps the seriousness of the moment, but, and the Patriots are different because they've just brainwashed everybody into turning this into a mechanical deal. But first-time head coaches or someone like Andy Reid, who hasn't been there in forever, and this is a different team, I'm fascinated to see kind of the mental aspect of this week and what they decide to do with it.
Got to switch hotels a lot. Really, that's a secret. Just constantly switching hotels.
I would, there was the... I remember when we were covering the Sweet 16 NCAA basketball tournament, and I was at the paper in Newark, and I think John Calipari in Kentucky won the region because they got there, and their hotel was wildly infested with bed bugs, and he shipped them off to like Summit or Chatham or one of the nicest where like Eli Manning lives, like nicest suburb of New Jersey, and then they had a very cozy sleep, and I think they resented the bed bugs and they won the title. So maybe you're onto something there for sure.
There is, yeah, Miami. tell you, Miami has something about it. You had Eugene Robinson down there. You had a Stanley Wilson back there back in the day, too. A little, unfortunately for him and for the Bengals, sort of fell off the wagon Super Bowl weekend. I mean, there are temptations.
It's temptation, and it's just like the enormity of it. I mean, you know, I would guess these guys all locked down right afterwards, but there's the temptation, there's the family aspect of it, there's the media aspect of it. I mean, there's so much stuff that you could probably get into on the good side of things, never mind the bad things. I mean, I think we're probably beyond the time in our life where someone's sneaking downtown and doing something crazy the night before the Super Bowl. I mean, I think that's sort of, you know, career suicide. But that said, I mean, these coaches have to prepare for every plausible scenario. And, you know, back to the Panthers example, I think Ron Rivera was so tight that week that the team literally took it to the extreme, and a bunch of them that had connecting hotel rooms opened like the doors in between everybody's room, and they made like a mock nightclub. Like, they were basically making fun of how restrictive the rules were, and so, and they would like flick the lights on and off, and they would like blast like club music, and that was sort of their answer to, you know, dealing with the problem at hand. But you know, it might be different. I mean, Miami, the setting might be a little bit different. You know, it's not downtown Santa Clara where you're like shoved into like some tech campus hellhole. You might actually have a decent place here and a little bit of a view. So who knows? I mean, it's anything's possible in Miami, I guess.
That was I remember Tracy Porter when the Saints knocked off the Colts 10 years ago. He told the story of the defensive backs would just hole up in one of the rooms, and they'd like put blankets and towels down on the floor, and they'd all sit there and they just watch cut-ups like all week. And that's why he knew to jump that Peyton Manning route and got the pick six that sort of sealed that game. So
wow,
yeah, kind of go watch film. I guess that's like the lesson of basically every football team ever. Go watch more film. You'll win the Super Bowl.
It's funny you said that, because, you know, I've done a version of the same bad story, you know, every year for like, and every year I come and I'm just interested in asking the question anyway, just in case I finally get a good answer to it, which is, how far back do you go and how crazy do you drive yourself, especially if you're facing someone like Andy Reid or Kyle Shanahan, both of whom, theoretically, their depth of football knowledge goes back decades if you include Kyle's dad and all the stuff that he's absorbed. And so if you're a defensive coordinator facing these guys, you know, and you're hold up or a player or defensive back, are you watching, you know, Houston Texans 2008 film and wondering what's going to happen? Are you watching Eagles 1999 Donovan McNabb fresh out of Syracuse film? You know, what are you looking at when you come in? Like, how far back would you go? Because, you know, obviously both of these guys are going to pull out all the stops.
Man, it's just, when you really think about it, I don't know, kind of glad I didn't become an NFL head coach. It all just sounds so miserable.
Just really hard.
Yeah.
A lot of work. Yeah.
All right, Connor. You got a busy week coming up. We will see you Wednesday on the Week Side Show. Or more specifically, Jenny will see you Wednesday on the Week Side Show. I'll listen to it.
Thanks. I appreciate that. You and my mom. So we're doing good. One listener at a time.
There you go. Multiple person audience. That's what we shoot for here. All right, man. I'll talk to you.
All right. Thanks, Gary.
All right. Just me now. And, I the thing I'm most looking forward to is, I guess, just points in this year's Super Bowl. I enjoyed how tense last year's game was, the 13-3 game, and how it was like every play, every possession was so important. What I don't like after games like that is, I feel like when there's low-scoring games, there's a lot more sort of finger-pointing and blame and something has gone wrong, and I'm sort of a weenie, and I just don't like when people are sort of like branded as goats, bad goats, like you blew the game goats, not the other goat. You know, I think back to the Nick Foles game, and it was kind of like, oh, look, you know, look at this. Look at all these points scored. Everyone played so well. This is so exciting. I think it's going to be that type of game. I just think with 2 weeks to prepare, Kyle Shanahan and Andy Reid, that is, if you're doing the power ranking of basically offensive coaches you wouldn't want to face with 2 weeks of preparation, those guys are probably at the top. So I think you see a lot of points this year. I think we get to be more positive coming out of this game, no matter which team wins. But more than anything, I'm just kind of looking forward to our little lineup of podcasts this week. We have a full lineup again, 5 days, and then I will be back with a special guest on not only on the Thursday Deep Dive Show, but also the show a week from today, the Monday after the Super Bowl. We're going to recap the whole thing. It's going to be a great week down in Miami, and I hope you are going to stick with us. The MMQB Monday Morning NFL Podcast is me, Gary Gramling. Thanks to Connor Orr, Kaylin Kaler, and Jenny Vrentis for popping in this week. We are produced by Shelby Royston. SI's executive producer of podcasts is Scott Brody. Ben Eagle is director of editorial projects and product. Mark Mravick is emeritus editor of the MMQB. Andy Benoit is the founder of the MMQB NFL Podcast. Keep up with our entire lineup of podcasts 5 days a week by subscribing to the MMQB NFL Podcast for free on Apple Podcasts. And while you're there, please do us a favor and leave a rating and review. It really does help other people find the show, which is also available on Spotify, Radio.com, Stitcher, SI.com, and wherever else you listen to podcasts.